Good evening, everybody. I now call this remote meeting of the House Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee to order, and we will begin by taking the roll.
Chair Long.
Present.
Vice Chair Akam.
Present.
Minority Lead Swazinski.
Here.
Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Bo. Representative Bo. Representative Christensen. Representative Franson?
Present.
Representative Grunhagen? Representative Grunhagen? Representative Hollins? Representative Hollins? Representative Hornstein? Representative Hornstein?
Present.
Representative Igo?
Present.
Representative Lee? Representative Lee? Representative Lippertz?
Present.
Representative Lislegard? Representative Lislegard? Representative Mecklens?
Mecklen present.
Representative Munson is excused, I believe. Representative Stevenson?
Present.
I believe we do have a quorum, correct?
Yeah, Representative Grunhagen's present.
Representative Grunhagen's here as well. So we have a quorum. Thank you, members. Representative Swazinski, you have a question before we get started?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. And just two real quick questions before we get started. Just wanted to double check if we'd received budget targets for this committee. And then it's my understanding that this bill is going to spend about $115 million. Is this, as it gets sent to Ways and Means, will this $115 million count against that budget target? And just kind of wanted to see where this sits within the realm of things as we operate through the rest of session.
Thank you for the good questions, Representative Swazinski. So we have not received budget targets yet. I believe those are coming out next Tuesday. I spoke to Chair Moran this morning, and we're moving it to Ways and Means tonight, I hope. And the plan will be to work on an amendment in Ways and Means that will be making clear that this is intended to be drawn from the federal stimulus dollars that were passed last week and not from the general fund. So this won't count against our budget targets. And that is the intent for action in Ways and Means. So with that, we will go ahead and get started. We have two bills tonight. The first bill is my bill, House File 2216, which is dealing with the issues around the gas price spikes that we had a hearing on just a couple of weeks ago. And first, I will move that House File 2216 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. I also have an author's amendment, which is coded DE1, and the author's amendment takes into account feedback that we've received from the utilities, as well as from the Public Utilities Commission and from the Department of Commerce. There aren't that many changes from the underlying draft, but it was a little hard to read as an amendment. And so we just decided to make it a delete all so that it would be easier for folks to track in committee. Any questions on the delete all? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The DE1 is adopted. So members, I'm going to just briefly describe the bill, and then we're going to have Mr. Eliff do a brief bill walkthrough, and then we will be hearing testimony to the bill. So last month, as members on this committee know, we saw gas prices spike to really extraordinary highs. We had a sobering joint hearing on this issue, as I mentioned, with the Senate just 2.5 weeks ago. And in that hearing, we heard just how extreme and expensive this price spike was. And there was a graphic that the Department of Commerce shared in that hearing, which I just wanted to call members' attention to again. And this is a 10-year graphic looking at the price spike for the President's Day weekend. But I think you could go back another couple of decades and it would still stand out as a really remarkably high price spike that we've seen in proportion to some of the gas price spikes that we've seen even in the last decade. So we know that this these impacts on the utilities and their consumers is coming into focus. For municipal utilities, we know their bills come due monthly and that these impacts will put a real strain on their customers as soon as this upcoming month. Some municipal utilities, we heard in our hearing, will see up to $500 cost per household. And even if you spread this out over a whole year, this would be $40 per month. The bill we're hearing today would provide loans to allow municipal utilities to spread these costs over up to 5 years, interest-free. This would reduce the impact on all municipal customers, small businesses, large businesses, and residential alike. We know if we want to provide this relief, we need to act before the end of the month, because otherwise municipal utilities will have to choose other options since their bills are coming due. So there's urgency in what we are doing today. We also heard about the impact this will have on low-income customers. Just this week, CenterPoint filed with the PUC to move earlier than the normal fall true-up to help spread out the impacts on ratepayers. CenterPoint said that the cost to an average household will be $394 when you include financing costs. And to put this in context, the average CenterPoint customer bill is $672 per year. We know that the costs faced by nearly all gas customers in the state will fall hardest on our low-income residents. So the second thing this bill would do is to provide relief to low-income households, holding them harmless for this event that is beyond anything in recent experience. This is particularly important after so many Minnesotans have had such a difficult year with the pandemic and are already struggling in many cases to keep up with their electric bills and with the other payments that they have to do to maintain their quality of life. Senator Senjum has introduced the companion to this bill, and the Senate Energy Committee is hearing this bill tomorrow. And I am hopeful, members, that we can act swiftly to help deal with this really pressing need. And with that, I'll ask Mr. Elef to do a brief walkthrough of the Delete All Amendment. Mr. Elef.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, as the chair indicated, this bill has two parts. The first one is dealing with municipal utilities. As you probably recall, municipal utilities are public bodies that are owned and in many cases operated by the cities in which they provide service. And there are 33 natural gas utilities in Minnesota throughout all geographic areas of the state. And what this bill does, as the chair indicated, is provide zero interest loans for a term not exceeding 5 years to those utilities who file an application with the Commissioner of Commerce to receive such loans. Along with the application includes information on purchasing and the price of purchasing during what's referred to in the bill as the critical period, meaning the days between February 12th and 17th when the prices spiked really high. And the commissioner determines the amount of that loan based on obviously the amount of applications received and the amount of money available for loans. Principal repayments get paid back to the commissioner, which deposits that money back into the general fund. If the money is coming out of the general fund, it may not be, as the chair indicated. The bill also does say that if funding is received from another source to deal with this natural gas spiking problem, that the appropriation would be reduced commensurately. The second part of the bill, as the chair indicated, deals with low-income natural gas heating customers of all types of utilities, not only munis, but also public utilities and district heating companies that are powered by natural gas, and also there are two co-ops in the state that provide natural gas service. And one of the key elements of this is deciding who is eligible to receive these this relief. And you'll see at the bottom of page 3, the definition of eligible low-income household. There are three possible criteria. A household first that may have received federal home heating assistance fund under the federal LIHEAP program this year or the previous year, a second eligibility criterion is that the customer participated in a payment agreement with the utility at any time since March 2020. A payment agreement is a negotiated agreement between a customer and a utility where the customer has fallen behind in payments, and may recall that that payment agreement is necessary in order for a customer to not be disconnected during the cold weather period. Okay. And the third possible criteria for being eligible for this assistance is that the customer missed two or more monthly bill payments or made only partial payments since October of 2020. If either of those three criteria are met, that household is eligible for relief under this section of the bill. And the relief is to come in the form of bill credits, which the utility will administer. And those bill credits can be applied over a period of up to 12 months or even longer if the Commissioner of Commerce or the Public Utilities Commission believes that a longer period is in the public interest. The Commissioner of Commerce is charged with developing this bill credit program for low income households to defray a portion of those costs. The Commission will develop a methodology based on the information we have on utility purchasing and natural gas pricing information to estimate exactly how high the incremental costs were during that critical period of February, and make a determination as to the amount of bill credits that customers will receive. With respect to public utilities, the Public Utilities Commission, which regulates those utilities, will be making that determination of the size of the bill credits that, that households will receive. The last section of the bill is the appropriation section, which right now has $15 million from the general fund going for the municipal loans and $100 million from the general fund for the low-income relief. That is a summary of the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Reliff. Looks like we have at least one question on the bill summary. Representative Swazinski. Representative Swazinski, did you have a question?
Mr. Chair, did you call on me?
Yes, your hand is up.
Yes, thank you. My phone is ringing. Just a quick question to Mr. Eloff. Do these small private utilities, will they qualify for that loan program?
Mr. Eloff.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Swazinski. Yes, they qualify for the program for their low-income customers. If you notice on lines 411 and 412.
I think the question was to the loan program.
The loan program is only for municipal utilities.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Is there an estimate on cost of what that would be on the to include those folks beyond the municipals?
So if that's a question to me, Representative Swazinski, I don't know the answer. I saw the amendment that was filed for Representative Stevenson's bill tomorrow on this question. And I have not been approached by any of those utilities. I'm certainly open to a discussion about if they are in need of assistance, how much assistance that would be. I'd be happy to have that conversation with you, and maybe we could work on that between now and Ways and Means.
That sounds good, Mr. Chair. And then just real quick question, because I think the plan is to potentially use money that comes from the federal government, what happens if the dollars are more than what is spent as far as what you set aside? Maybe between now and then we'll actually find out the actual number, but kind of what is your thought for the extra money, or would it be dumped into this program? Would it be spent someplace else? What are your thoughts on that?
I'm happy to answer that. And then if I get anything wrong, Mr. Eloff can jump in. So there, the funds would roll back at the end of the biennium to the general fund for the unspent money from both programs. Representative Swasinski, did you have a follow-up?
No, Mr. Chair, I think we're good. Thank you.
Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, just, you know, the information I've received, and this would be for the testifier too, is that CenterPoint has 7 billion cubic feet of natural gas in storage in Minnesota. Why didn't we use some of that to offset the spike in the price if we've got that much in storage? I don't know if anybody else has anything in storage. That's just the information. I guess what I'm saying is, you know, what do we have this in storage except to offset a crisis like this? And was it really justified to spike the price as high as it was? I'm a layperson, so I'm learning, but I just thought I'd throw that question out.
Thank you for the question, Representative Grunhagen. I think it's a good one. Maybe we'll hear from our testifiers, and then you can repeat your question, and we'll see if any of our testifiers would like to answer it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. So seeing no more hands on questions on the bill, we will next turn to our testifiers. And first, we are going to have Chair of the Public Utilities Commission, Katie Sieben. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm going to share my screen now. So type for just 1 second and can you see that, Mr. Chair? Sorry. My screen?
No, not yet, Chair Sieben.
Okay, sorry. Here we go.
There we go.
Okay. Thank you so much for members and Chair Long for having us testify here today. My name is Katie Sieben. I am the Chair of the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. And Commissioner Joe Sullivan has also joined me and will speak after me. I won't delve too deep into the information that was shared about the situation from the joint House and Senate hearing in which we testified. But to remind committee members, the Public Utilities Commission has opened an investigation into the natural gas price spike. We have held one public hearing on the topic and participated in a meeting with MISO, our regional grid operator, to learn about the impacts of the storm on the electric side. The high-level takeaway is that there was reliable service for Minnesotans, despite very, very challenging situations for our state's utilities. Our focus remains today on the impact to the regulated natural gas customers at the commission. We know from the public meeting we held and from a filing that came in yesterday from CenterPoint Energy that millions of Minnesotans will see dramatic financial impacts from the February storm. Beginning in the fall, when the annual true-up filings begin, it's estimated that Minnesota rate-regulated residential customers will see surcharges from February's storm on top of their normal bills in the range of $200 to $400. The commission can essentially spread this amount over more months or take other mitigation measures, but without targeted relief by either the state or federal governments, we will likely be looking largely at just mitigation measures. Questions will be asked of the utilities about the prudency of spot market purchases, whether other measures could or should have been taken. And those are very important questions we'll examine. And I'll turn now to Representative Grunhagen's question about the use of storage. And that is a question that will be, that each utility that's highlighted on the screen here will be making filings with the commission about the amount of gas that they had in storage. We do know from a public filing that CenterPoint made yesterday that they did have that stored gas was used during the storm, and that gas was purchased during the summer months when the price of gas was low. But yet we do know there was still a significant impact to CenterPoint Energy. So the takeaway for, I think for you members, is that your customers will see real financial impacts in the form of higher bills. I share the frustration expressed by Minnesota consumers and the anger, quite honestly, that the lack of careful planning by other jurisdictions has likely caused this financial harm to Minnesotans. I'll also point out that other states across the country and utility customers are seeing similar impacts. So my message today is one of advocacy. Minnesota ratepayers need financial assistance to lessen the financial impacts on their bills. I appreciate that Chair Long has brought forward this bill and point out that although the section of his bill that targets low-income customers is targeted towards low-income customers, any assistance will help tremendously. We're very supportive of making this legislation work and are supportive of any targeted relief the state is able to provide to help lessen the impact of this unprecedented event. I'll turn it over to Commissioner Sullivan now and point out to members and remind you that since we have two open investigations and open dockets on this matter, we're happy to try to answer general questions, but we can't speculate on how the commission will rule on the matters that are before it. So thank you very much, and I'll turn it over to you, Commissioner Sullivan.
Thank you, Chair Stephen, and welcome back to the committee, Vice Chair Sullivan.
Thank you, Chairman Long, and thank you to the committee for having us here to talk about this very important issue. And I'll be brief. Chair Sieben, Commissioner Sieben covered the critical and important issues. I wanted to talk very briefly about two things. First, I want to impress upon the commission how important it is I want to impress upon the committee how important it is that, you know, that we all understand that the infrastructure investments that have been made in Minnesota's system have kept us resilient from a reliability perspective. As we went through the cold snap, Minnesotans were warm in their homes, and that is critically important, and that people were not freezing in their homes in Minnesota like they were in other parts of the country. But I think what this event has shown is, from an economic resiliency perspective, we are vulnerable. And what I wanted to do following on that is to, I think that it's really important that the committee understands how large the service territories are of the utilities that are impacted and how they span the entire state. So this is CenterPoint Energy service territory that Chair Sieben is sharing with us now. And you can see that if you go back to the previous slide there, you can see that the service territory of CenterPoint spans from in Brainerd, down through Minneapolis, to Blue Earth, to Mankato, where I live, you know, all the way over to the western part of the state, in Laverne. We have a list here of all of the communities on the next slide that are served by CenterPoint. Many of these communities are, they're smaller communities, and they're going to be very, very challenged. They are a part of that number. The average, they're going to be paying as well. The charge, that $300 to $400 per year charge that will be the result of this if nothing is done. If you go the next slide here. This is Great Plains Natural Gas Company, one of our other natural gas utilities. If you scroll to the next slide, you can see the communities that are served by Great Plains. Marshall, Minnesota, Great Plains, Breckenridge, Montevideo, Redwood Falls, Renville, Wood Lake, So I mean, these are all communities that are going to see very significant impacts. Xcel Energy is our second largest natural gas utility in the state. Northfield, St. Paul, parts of Minneapolis, and you can see here how, you know, all the communities that are going to be impacted by the increases. And then lastly, Minnesota Energy Resources, which is our third largest natural gas company in the state. We've, you know, listed out Butterfield, Canby, Cannon Falls, Glenville, Mora. So we wanted these to be in here to be illustrative for you to see all the communities that are going to be impacted by this with the investor-owned utilities. So if you have any questions, I also do think I want to note the question that Representative Grunhagen asked before is really important. What were the opportunities? What were the things that were in place beforehand? If they were utilized to their full capacity, and that's something that is going to be brought up and discussed throughout our investigation. But I think that's a really important question, as are a whole number of questions similar to that. So thank you. And if the committee has any questions, I'm looking forward to discussing them with you shortly. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Sullivan. Next, we will hear from Deputy Commissioner Renate from the Department of Commerce. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Long, and the committee members. For the record, I'm Aditya Ranade, Deputy Commissioner for Energy Resources at the Department of Commerce. The Department of Commerce learned that some Minnesota utilities had to buy natural gas at more than 50 times the average price during the mid-February polar vortex period, owing to both supply and demand pressures in the middle of the country. As Chair Sieben and Commissioner Sullivan stated, the Public Utilities Commission now has a formal investigation of rate-regulated investor-owned utilities to find out what the impact is and how to protect our consumers from getting hit with the high utility bills. As an advocate for consumers, we are assisting in that investigation. This investigation does not apply to municipal utilities, as municipal utilities are not rate regulated by the Public Utilities Commission. But through our collaborative relationship with the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association, we're asking for information regarding what their member utilities and customers are likely to experience, when they're likely to experience it, and evaluating options that might exist through the public and private routes to help the situation. We are encouraging all utilities to tell their customers about the availability of energy assistance, which will help some households, but not all, given the scope of this price spike. We have also doubled the energy assistance crisis benefit maximum from $600 to $1,200. So the situation presents a significant challenge to Minnesota's residential and business consumers, and we are glad that the House is moving forward with this bill that provides relief to those who will need it most. We have had input in the drafting of this bill and believe this represents a well-constructed approach to provide relief. I thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Deputy Commissioner. Next, we will be hearing from Annie Levinson-Falk with the Citizens Utility Board. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Annie Levinson-Falk, and I'm the Executive Director of the Citizens Utility Board, or CUB, a nonprofit advocate for residential and small business utility consumers in Minnesota. You should have received a letter from myself, Bill Grant with Minnesota Community Action Partnership, and Pam Marshall with the Energy Sense Coalition on this topic. And you've also heard a lot of information about what's happened in this price spike, so I'll try not to repeat that. However, I'd like to stress the impact that this is about to have on customers, including the two-thirds of Minnesota households that heat their homes with natural gas. CenterPoint on Tuesday filed a request to the Public Utilities Commission to increase residential bills by an average of more than 25% for two entire years to cover the price of gas for just 11 days plus interest. For comparison, their last general rate case raised bills by 4.7%. That case was litigated at the PUC and before an administrative law judge with multiple rounds of expert testimony and cross-examination of witnesses, and it took nearly 18 months to complete. In Minnesota, we are appropriately very careful in increasing the price of essential utilities, and what we're facing now due to the natural gas price spike is astronomical. The costs are hitting at a time when many households are already struggling with the economic effects of the pandemic. Minnesota's regulated utilities that are now dealing with this price spike were already reporting between 20 and 46% more residential customers behind on their bills this January compared with January 2020. Even more striking, the average amount owed by a residential customer has grown by between 66 and 277% over that past year. Because of the price spike, more customers are going to be unable to afford their natural gas bills, and customers who are already struggling will fall farther behind. There are some things happening that will help. I'm encouraged by the prospect of a federal investigation into price gouging. And the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission investigation, while it can't address prices charged by out-of-state suppliers, we'll look at the response by Minnesota utilities, and whether that was appropriate, as Representative Grunhagen mentioned, and options to mitigate cost impact to customers. However, neither of these avenues is likely to resolve the issue, and certainly not before very large costs start hitting Minnesotans. This bill provides needed assistance to relieve some of the enormous burden that will be felt by Minnesotans. Very importantly, it's also appropriately flexible to ensure that it complements other federal assistance that's going to be available for households and to help get funds out the door quickly. I do have two suggestions as the bill moves forward. The first is to consider if sufficient funding is available, whether some relief may be provided to struggling small businesses. The second is a concern with Section 3 of the bill, which states that any funds Minnesota receives for the price spike from federal government or from a lawsuit or settlement regarding price gouging will go to offset the cost of this program. It certainly makes sense to take advantage of federal funds as appropriate, as I understand is going to be done. But if there was price gouging in particular, the funds that are sent back should fairly go to reimburse all customers for the amounts that they overpaid, including residential customers at all income levels, commercial and industry as well. Mr. Chair, thank you for bringing this bill forward and for working with me and others on the language and for moving it quickly to respond to the urgent need. And I'm happy to answer questions at the appropriate time.
Thank you so much, Ms. Levinson-Falk. Next, we will hear from Bill Grant with Community Action Partnership. Welcome, Mr. Grant.
Thank you, Chair Long and committee members. My name is Bill Grant, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Community Action Partnership, or MNCAP. MNCAP represents the 24 community action agencies that serve all 87 counties in Minnesota, with programs ranging from energy assistance and weatherization to Head Start and Meals on Wheels. Of the 24 community action agencies, 21 of them contract with the state to provide the federally funded Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, or LIHEAP. Particularly during the pandemic, LIHEAP has helped seniors and families struggling to pay utility bills maintain safe, stable housing while freeing up resources for other vital needs. As noted in the letter consumer advocates sent to the committee, Minnesota's natural gas utilities estimate that an average $200 to $400 surcharge will be passed on to Minnesota's natural gas consumers. A study by the Federal Reserve Bank in 2019 found that 40% of Americans lack the financial resources to pay an unexpected $400 expense. The expected surcharge on natural gas bills brought on by the February polar vortex is just such an expense. Not only were Minnesotans dependent on natural gas for home heating, unprepared for a market distortion occurring in another part of the country, they have no ability now to avoid the impact of the surcharge coming on their bills. Many of those served by LIHEAP have been deeply impacted by the pandemic. Through no fault of their own, Minnesotans in the service economy, healthcare, and other sectors have lost their jobs for extended periods. Many of the people we have seen this year are applying for assistance paying their utility bills for the first time in their lives. An unexpected additional $400 average surcharge comes at a particularly cruel time for these families. This is why MNCAP supports House File 2216 to provide a bill credit to those who qualify by virtue of their LIHEAP eligibility status, their participation in a payment plan, or their arrearage status. We believe that the bill effectively targets those most in need while avoiding a complex administrative structure to determine eligibility. And by relying on information already at hand in utility company databases, the bill avoids the messy process of securing data releases from consumers in order to process these bill credits. Finally, Mr. Chair, to address a question I know is probably coming, it is true that the state will be receiving additional funding for LIHEAP from the American Rescue Plan legislation that President Biden just signed. It is important to keep in mind, however, the scope of the arrearage problem we anticipate once utilities end their voluntary shutoff moratoria later this year. Many families have had to make the difficult choice to defer utility bill payments during this time. The gas price spike surcharge will only add to this misery and must be addressed separately. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd be happy to take any questions when you're ready.
Thank you so much, Mr. Grant. Next, we will be hearing from Kent Sulem with the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. Welcome, Mr. Sulem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kent Sulem, Government Relations Director for MMUA. I am joined this evening by our Chief Executive Officer, Jack Cagle, and the manager of the New Ulm utility, Chris Manderfeld. And Jack has said that he will, in the interest of time, be available for questions and resource. But I think we're going to have Chris do the bulk of our talking. I'll just give a quick overview of our need. We have been working with all of our members for the gas utilities. And we're hearing pretty much the same thing. We had a handful of communities up on the very northern part of the state served by the Viking line out of Canada that appears to be having very nominal impact. They were not affected as much as the rest of the pipelines seem to be. Those who are served by their pipelines are in that $400 to $500 range. Some are creeping a little higher. Some of you may have seen a news article that came out of Two Harbors on Monday, a couple of television interviews that were done. They had to mail out their bills already, and because it's not feasible to try to reprogram the billing software and in the turnaround time and the expense that would take, it just wasn't viable. So their residents, the one fellow had a bill that was normally $120 for the month, and his was just under $700 when you packed on the surcharge. I want to let you know that none of our utilities have indicated they have any intent to make somebody pay this in 1 month. It's a practical matter of how the bills get turned around, and Ms. Manderfeld might be able to explain that a little better than I can. But you may hear people talking about, well, I got a $700 bill, and that is going to be happening, but they are all encouraged to reach out to the utility who are willing to set up payment plans, who are intending to try to break down the bills going forward. But it just was not a feasible action to take, given the limited time between the vortex hitting in mid-February and the bills going out at the end of the month. So just rest assured that we are working with our folks and working with them on options. Those options will be greatly enhanced by the passage of 2216 that would allow utilities not to have to spend their entire reserves, but to have some flexibility in cash flow to minimize the expense and costs that would be passed on to the consumers in any short period of time, to be able to stretch out those payments. And certainly this parts of the bill that create enhanced low-income assistance that then could be used to pay the bills directly would also help keep those costs down for everybody else. With that, I would yield to Ms. Manderfeld, if that's all right with the chair.
Ms. Manderfeld, welcome to the committee.
Chris, you're muted.
I think you're on mute.
You'd think I'd be used to this already. thank you. Chris Manderfeld, I'm the utility director for the New Ulm Public Utilities, and we're located approximately about 90 miles southwest of the Twin Cities. And I'd like to give you a perspective from a medium and small utilities on the impact that this natural gas surge had on us. As you all know, Minnesota utilities saw prices that were, upwards of 100 times what the average seasonal price was. And from the perspective of NUAM, we're a community that has a population of about a little over 13,500 residents. And our January gas bill for this year was a little over $727,000. When it was all said and done, our February gas supply bill was $7.5 million. So that's a huge increase for 13,500 residents. NUAM also helps out some smaller utilities around our area. We do that by buying gas, and we handle the balancing for those communities. And these small communities, they have an average population of about 1,100 residents. These three small towns saw an increase in their gas supply costs of over $900,000. For an example, one of these small communities has a population of 1,150. Their gas supply bill for January was $55,800. Their February gas supply bill was over $469,000. Municipal utilities are owned by the citizens of the community, and the fuel costs that are incurred are passed on to our customers, unfortunately, through a gas adjustment. There's no markup on the gas that goes to our communities, but ultimately it's our customers that are going to bear the burden of this, of the gas price surge. And it's been detrimental to our residential customers, our small businesses, and any industry that we have in our town. The municipal utilities, once we knew about the price surge and the price spike, we immediately notified all of our customers, as well as the small towns that we deal with, through a campaign with natural gas alerts, through social media, print, radio, you know, trying to get our customers to conserve, because knowing that the more that they conserve, the lower their bill is going to be. And that was the only way that we felt as a community that we could really protect our customers. Once we got done dealing with the price surge, then the municipal utilities needed to figure out how we were going to bill our customers. And many utilities were forced to put the entire amount of the impact on a bill, mainly because of software limitations. For NUAM, we basically had 2 weeks to figure out how we were going to bill our customers. We did communicate to all of our customers through multiple ways that we're looking at entering into contracts with our customers. We don't expect them to pay the entire bill. So in many cases, a lot of utilities, municipal utilities, are looking at spreading out the cost of these bills over several months, some over a year. This is mainly done to soften the impact to our customers. And by doing that, it does leave utilities in a vulnerable state. So you basically have your gas supply bill from your natural gas supplier, which is due now. The utilities have to pay that bill now. But by spreading the impact over months or potentially a year, the revenue that's coming in to pay that bill is being spread out. This leaves the cities with little or no reserves. Some cities will maybe use their entire reserve to pay their gas bill. It's also leaving them hoping that nothing else happens until they can build those reserves back up. One aspect of this bill is the low interest loan, which could definitely help cash flow the utility and the customer. And basically what that does is it helps spread out the impact of the city on their cash reserve balance. But it also allows the utility to have some flexibility in how they can coordinate the payment with their customers. Gives the utility some option as to how we can help our customers pay their bills. And for these three small cities that we deal with, this is a way that they can help their businesses and their residents. Our customers have been hit this year with COVID, with business closures, and now the high natural gas prices. The no interest loan would allow the flexibility to offer extended payment plans to those that need it and still allow the utility to do what it does best, which is serve its customers. So if there's any questions, I can certainly take them at the appropriate time.
Thank you so much, Ms. Manderfeld. We have one more presentation, and that is Mr. Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. Mr. Evans, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very brief. I want to let the committee know that we fully support the passage of this bill. We really appreciate Chair Long's willingness to work with us over the last few days on a short timeline to make sure the bill works well with our system and works well with the regulatory scheme. Appreciate the PUC and Department of Commerce weighing in as well. I think in a relatively short time, the bill was put together in a way that's going to be very helpful to our customers. And I just wanted to express that to the committee and urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Evans. Now we will take questions from members, and Representative Grunhagen, I promise to return to you first, so go right ahead.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I got a couple questions. First one is, so if I understood the testifying right, and I haven't had a chance to review your bill other than just a summary of it, is there a, if it is discovered that there were price gouging, that there would be some refunds back to the consumer, and what if this money was used to pay, would it refund back to the state? Is that correct?
Thank you for the question, Representative Grunhagen. So the way the bill is structured right now, if there is a settlement that comes to the state for price gouging, then that would go to repay the state for these expenses that are incurred on the bill. And that was important to the Senate in our discussions. Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and then I have CenterPoint Energy in my office and it heats my building, my commercial building. I'm glad I had fossil fuels and not windmills and solar heating my building in the last vortex. Okay. So I like CenterPoint and they've been good to me, but it is difficult. And I guess I would ask Ms. Falk this, if she's the correct one, you know, when they have seven, according to the information I have, CenterPoint has 7 billion cubic feet of storage in Minnesota. Why wouldn't you use that versus buying on the open market, which is going to spike consumer prices to offset this crisis that we had in the polar vortex. I mean, and then the follow-up question on that is, did you sell any of that storage on the open market at a higher price than what you paid for it? If she'd like to respond.
So Representative Grunhagen, I'm happy to direct your question to Ms. Levinson-Fox. She's not with CenterPoint. She's with the Citizens Utility Board. But she may be able to speak to the question. I do. Commissioner Sieben and Sullivan did speak a little bit to what the Public Utilities Commission is going to be looking into. But perhaps Ms. Levinson-Falk would care to respond to the issue generally. She's very knowledgeable.
Yeah, who wants to respond, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Grunhagen. I can certainly give you my take on it. And I'm probably a little freer to speak about this than Chair Sieben and Commissioner Sullivan because they have, as I said, an open proceeding in front of them. But it is a question that was specifically asked of all utilities in their investigation is, you know, did you have gas in storage and how was that used? And was it used to offset the amount, you know, to reduce the amount of gas that you would have had to purchase? And I think the same question goes for, they have programs called demand response where, you know, they pay customers or they give customer a discount on their gas rate, for the ability to interrupt them during emergencies like this, the voluntary thing that customers take on. So were those programs called upon? And if not, why? And I think, you know, findings like that could certainly be used, you know, if there is something where the utility really made an imprudent decision there and it cost customers a lot of money, I think that would be very appropriate to reduce the amount of cost that gets passed on to customers. That's probably a couple steps ahead of where we are in Minnesota right now in terms of finding out what has happened. So I think that's very appropriate. I would be surprised with the level of, you know, just how high these costs are, if that's going to really have a substantial enough impact to bring them down to something that's still not going to be a really, really enormous bill for customers. So I'm encouraged to see where that investigation goes and hopefully,
you know, if there is anything that wasn't prudent, that gets taken into account. But I think that customers are still going to be hit with some really high costs.
Yeah. No, and I'm happy to. Okay. I realize they're at a crisis. And in fact, my daughter got a $200 spike on her gas bill in March. And so I know that they're being hit. And so did my other daughter in her business. So it is a crisis. It's really crunching their finances. And in some cases, their families are already behind. So I want to help them at all, if possible. But I also want an investigation to see that the things were done properly and not artificially inflated for profit, which does happen once in a while nowadays.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Grunhagen, for raising the very important issue of price gouging during emergency situations like what happened in Texas. I want you to know a few things. First of all, you might be aware that Senator Tina Smith has been urging a federal investigation into potential price gouging behavior by natural gas suppliers during the crisis, and I think she should be applauded. And I sent a letter that was signed by many of my colleagues encouraging her to persist with that investigation, and I certainly would invite you to send a similar message to Senator Smith on that point. You might be interested to know that since you don't sit on the Commerce Committee, Representative Grunhagen, that Minnesota is only one of 15 states that doesn't have a law in the books against price gouging in an emergency, which is really unfortunate. And we actually have a bill that came through the Commerce Committee this year that actually had the support of the retailers. We worked on a collaborative basis to get that bill through the Commerce Committee to pass a law against price gouging in an emergency that would have protected Minnesotans in an incident like what happened in Texas and what happened here that we're talking about. And I'm hopeful that it will come to the floor soon. And I'm hopeful that when it does, it will have your support. The other thing that I did want to mention, just because I think this is really interesting, and this is a great time to point out that we are very lucky here in the House Energy Committee to have just a phenomenal House research staffer named Bob Eliff, who wrote a phenomenal thing. He had no idea that I was going to bring him up right now, by the way. Like it's like a 20-page document talking about how natural gas system works in Minnesota that I read when this was happening because I was curious about a few things and answered like all of my questions. And among the many things that Bob noted, Mr. Eliff noted in that report, is that CenterPoint has an enormous storage facility in Minnesota. It actually holds 2.2 billion cubic feet of gas. It's in Waseca County. And they fill it up every summer, and then they use when the gas price is less expensive, and then they drain it during the winter months to manage supply. It makes sense. But the problem with it is that they can only take out 50,000 cubic feet a day. They can't drain it all at once. Otherwise, it would be unsafe to do that. Is what I learned from reading that report. And so just to answer your question, Representative Grunhagen, about what CenterPoint was doing and why they didn't just drain their storage, their facility that they use, they can't move that much out of it in a short period of time. But I highly recommend Mr. Eliff's report, which does a great job of laying out how our natural gas system in Minnesota works. And it's a great read. The last thing I did want to say is that, you know, Representative Grunhagen made a comment about wishing that, being glad that he had gas supply because he wouldn't want to trust wind power during the polar vortex. But actually, Representative Grunhagen's power undoubtedly came more from wind during the polar vortex than it normally did, because actually on the MISO grid during the polar vortex, wind supply spiked. It's important to note, as I have said many times in this committee before, that it is just fiction that the idea that renewables can't operate in extreme cold weather or that they contributed to what happened in Texas. The overwhelming majority of the power that was lost in Texas during the crisis was legacy fossil fuel or nuclear. Wind only accounted for 13% of the energy lost during the crisis. So I just want to make sure that anyone who's watching this is very clear that renewables are reliable even in extreme cold temperatures. There are Antarctic research stations powered solely by windmills. So no one should be concerned about that here in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm so glad that we are talking on this topic. It kind of reminds me of the fact that Minnesota will be taxing unemployment benefits, and this is probably a very good reason why we should move to conform to the $10,200 exemption that the federal government put in their last stimulus bill. As you know, and you heard on the House floor, that many stimulus payments are the taxes are being taken out and some people are not getting a stimulus payment. So if we could conform the unemployment to the federal level, more people would have money in their pocket to help offset the cost of the expensive gas bill that they will be getting. More money in the hands of the individual is much better than in the hands of our government. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Franson. Representative Grunhagen, I don't see other hands up, so we'll go back to you for a second question.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say I appreciate Representative Stevenson's comments, and I would agree on, I appreciate his input on the natural gas supply and stuff, but he must be reading different articles by experts in terms of the electric and solar reliability. It doesn't provide base load electricity. We all know that. So I have to respectfully disagree with him, but he and I are getting a little closer on other things. Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. And I will agree with Representative Stevenson that the Mr. Elef summary is terrific. And maybe we'll go ahead and recirculate that to our members, because I think it's a good read. Representative Stevenson, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, I just want to be really brief, because it's amazing to me. This committee hearing is like an advertisement for all my bills, because Representative Grunhagen was talking about how great kind of giving me a chance to advertise my price gouging bill. And then Representative Franson was just talking about a bill that I'm also carrying for a UI income tax subtraction. So I'm really excited to see so much promotion for bills that I'm carrying in the Energy Committee. So thank you.
Well, before we turn into the Commerce Committee or the Tax Committee, I think maybe we'll wrap up here. It looks like we are done with questions from members. And so I will go ahead and renew my motion that House File 2216, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And I'll just thank everyone for the discussion today, and for all of the presenters to, I think, really put in sharp focus the importance of this bill and the importance of the efforts to try to help provide relief to our municipal utilities, to our small business customers, and to our residential customers. And with that, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long.
Aye.
Vice Chair Akam.
Aye.
Minority Lead Swazinski.
Aye.
Representative Bierman.
Aye.
Representative Bo.
Aye.
Representative Christensen.
Aye.
Representative Franson.
Aye.
Representative Grunhagen.
Aye.
Representative Hollins. Representative Hollins. Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Representative Igo.
Igo, aye.
Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Representative Lippert.
Aye.
Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard, aye.
Representative Mecklens.
Aye.
Representative Munson.
Munson votes no.
Representative Stevenson.
Aye.
There being 15 ayes and one nay, the motion is agreed to, and the bill is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you for our testifiers. Members, next up, we have House File 1135 with Representative Bierman. Representative Bierman, would you care to move your bill?
Yes, please, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 1135, please.
Representative Bierman moves that House File 1135 be laid over. And Representative Bierman, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, for the evening meeting here tonight. This bill repeals the sunset on the Gas Utility Infrastructure Cost Recovery Statute. The statute was enacted in 2007, extended in 2013, and has become the accepted method of paying for certain natural gas infrastructure projects. The statute allows a gas distribution utility to petition the Public Utilities Commission to recover the costs of repairing or updating its system without filing a full rate case. This statute does not authorize cost recovery for projects that expand the gas system to new customers. Costs that are approved by the PUC under this statute are included in a rider on customer bills, a separate line item for costs that aren't included in the base rates. The reason for using a rider rather than including the costs in the base rates is that projects and the related costs are not predictable. Examples include replacement of natural gas facilities located in a public right-of-way required by road construction or other public works project, surveys, assessments, and other work necessary to determine the need for replacement or modification of existing facilities to ensure compliance with state and federal regulations. Surveys can discover that only minimal repairs are needed or that major investments are required. And as regulations are updated, the utility can start on compliance projects without having to file a rate case, which is a costly and often lengthy proceeding that can be avoided by allowing these costs to be recovered in a rider. So the process will remain the same. The utility files a detailed proposal to the PUC, including projects and costs, and that is fully evaluated by the commission before the utility undertakes the work. After completion, the utility files a report on the projects and the expenditures, and the PUC may approve the cost recovery for the actual cost of completed projects. This mechanism provides the flexibility utilities need to address specific types of capital projects on the gas distribution system while ensuring that the projects and costs are scrutinized and are found to be in the public interest before a utility recovers those costs from customers. The sunset is no longer needed, and the repeal will avoid the use of legislative, agency, and company resources on further extensions. Mr. Chair, we could go to public testifiers next and then member questions, and we do have representatives from the utilities present this evening as well. Questions?
Thank you, Representative Bierman. And did you want to have Mr. Schillinger testify now?
I'm not sure that he needs to testify. I don't know that he has a prepared to, if he has some remarks he wants to make. Otherwise, I thought he was just here for questions.
I have him on my list to testify. Mr. Schillinger, would you like to speak?
Sure. Thank you, Chair. And Representative Bierman really articulated the bill in detail, and so I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. Minnesota Energy Resources Corporation, which has a little over 240,000 customers in 179 communities. You saw that earlier with the ICC testimony, supports this for the reasons that Representative Bierman mentioned. And so we're here in support of the bill. Again, to just stress two points. One, this is not about natural gas expansion projects. These are just projects that come up during the normal course of working with local governments, municipalities on right-of-way and DOT projects. Secondly, the getting rid of the sunset now just creates that certainty that we don't potentially have it go away. We won't be filing rate cases to recover this. This is a more timely way to be able to do it in a less expensive way. So thank you. And also, Chair, thank you for your bill, the last bill as well. I just wanted to, we support that as well, and the innovative approach that you're taking to address the issue of low-income customers. And thank you and the committee for that as well.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schillinger. Next, we will be, we have two individuals who have signed up for public testimony. And first, we will hear from Justin Fay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good evening, members of the committee. My name is Justin Fay, and I'm here on behalf of Fresh Energy. We appreciate the opportunity to share our very brief thoughts on House File 1135. We appreciate Representative Bierman bringing the bill forward and starting the conversation. As we think about the future of our gas system, advances in technology and new opportunities to pursue electrification mean that, quite simply, none of us really know exactly what type and scale of investments might be necessary to our gas system a decade or more from now. Our electricity system has been undergoing profound shifts over the past couple of decades, and it's entirely possible, if not likely, that our gas system will experience a similar scale of change in the coming years. Because of that, we believe that being deliberate and intentional about when and how we make investments will be more critical than ever. House File 1135 proposes to eliminate a sunset on a rate rider that has been in place since the mid-2000s, and that has been extended by the legislature in the past. Fresh Energy respectfully suggests that an extension here, rather than an outright repeal, might be more consistent with past conduct by the legislature and the best path forward, so the legislature can continue to exercise periodic review and oversight of investments being made on the system. I appreciate the opportunity to share these thoughts with you, thank you, Mr. Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Fay. Next, we will hear from Mike Bull. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Bull.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Mike Bull. I'm the policy director at the Center for Energy and Environment. We agree with Representative Bierman and other testifiers that the gas utility infrastructure rider has been beneficial to Minnesota utility customers and shareholders, allowing natural gas utilities to be more nimble and efficient with capital infrastructure investments in their distribution systems than would otherwise be possible. So we support Representative Bierman's bill and appreciate him bringing it forward. The issue we wanted to flag for the committee is that greenhouse gas emissions from natural gas end uses in Minnesota are increasing significantly. As the committee has heard previously, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency recently found that while Minnesota has been making great progress in reducing power sector emissions and very moderate progress in transportation and ag sector emissions, generally holding steady, greenhouse gas emissions from the commercial sector has increased 15% and a whopping 32% from the residential sector. These emissions are primarily due to the combustion of natural gas in buildings. An analysis CE published in December last year goes a step further. If Minnesota stays on the current trajectory, greenhouse gas emissions from natural gas end uses alone will surpass Minnesota's entire economy-wide 2050 greenhouse gas emissions targets by the year 2030. Emissions from every other sector would need to be reduced to zero if Minnesota were to meet its current statutory greenhouse gas goals, let alone the updated, more stringent goals in Vice Chair Akam's House File 1428. So we need to start getting our arms around how to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from the natural gas system pragmatically, equitably, affordably, reliably. Our one suggestion for the committee is similar to what my friend Justin Fay suggested for House File 1135 might be to extend the sunset on the rider rather than repeal it. And our rationale is that that would allow a future legislature the opportunity to put the rider in this broader context, such as to link its use by a natural gas utility to implementation of a natural gas innovation plan, should the bill authored by Representative Stevenson become law. That bill will be heard by the committee tomorrow, and as you'll hear from me then, we believe that the practical experience we can learn from innovation plans under the NGIA will help us evaluate the most practical and cost-effective alternatives for reducing greenhouse gas emissions in a measured and equitable way, and we strongly support that. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. That's what I have for you tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Bull. That's all we have for public testimony. Do we have any questions from members? And then we do have one amendment that we'll take up after that. I am not seeing member questions, so then we will go ahead and take up the amendment. We have an amendment coded A1, which I believe is Representative Mecklen's. Representative Mecklen, would you like to offer your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to offer my amendment.
Representative Mecklen moves the A1. Representative Mecklen, to your amendment.
So to my amendment is to not ban natural gas and or propane to new construction, which I've brought forward many, many times, as you know, and I'll continue to do so. I did actually take Representative Stevenson's advice, and I got it put into a bill, which I think is 2265. So this is a really important thing. We need an all the above energy kind of thing when these bad global things happen, so that we can all stay warm and make sure our lights come on. And I think this is a really, really important thing, and I hope I can have your support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mecklen. Discussion to the amendment. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Mecklen, for the amendment to consider. HF 1135 is a very tight cost recovery bill. It's focused on permitting repairs and essential changes to infrastructure for the utilities, and utilizing a process that includes careful oversight already that has been in place for years. It's not a change from what we are doing now. This amendment introduces something completely new. It would be an imposed mandate and would override local control. So I would ask members to vote no on the amendment, and we can take it up on his separate bill. Thank you.
Further discussion to the amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 say aye.
Aye.
All aye. Those...
aye.
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 No.
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 The noes have it, and the amendment is not adopted. I do not see, there are no additional amendments. So, Representative Bierman, any closing comments to your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just from the comments we heard tonight, obviously there's a lot more to do, and there's a lot that the legislature it will have a hand in, and hopefully we can continue to work together and move the state forward to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and take care of, in this case, the infrastructure that we need to maintain. So, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to members. Thank you to the testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. Representative Bierman renews his motion, and House File 1135 is laid over. Members, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking time out of your evenings for an additional hearing this week. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody. And with that, our meeting is adjourned.